Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour for misguided medicine. Oh, I said four. That's
a marital four?
A marital tour for misguided medicine? That's ridiculous. That doesn't even make grammatical sense.
That's not. I think you're confused.
It's a marital tour of misguided medicine.
That's correct.
And, you know, the marital part doesn't have that much to do with our show. It was just like another M. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, we are married.
Yeah.
I think it informs the relationship we have with each other.
Married.
Well, and like why we interact like we do, don't you think?
Whoa. You think people would, if we didn't clarify that we were married, people would be like, whoa, the chemistry between these two is off the charts. I'm shipping Justin and Sydney like crazy.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you think people would ship us?
Yeah.
People if would we weren't already married? Like if we were just two?
Their names are already the same. Their last names are the same. It's meant to be.
Well, I mean, in this reality, I would have kept my maiden name Smurl. I wouldn't have changed it to McElroy on a flyer.
Can I be Dirk Strongarms then? I mean, if we're changing our thing, I would like to be Dirk Strongarms.
Justin,
attorney at law.
You know, I've always believed that you can be anything
Thank you.
But
this is the original Sawbones, where we've been married since the beginning.
Of time.
You have brought Olive, the cat, into here.
I did. I brought the kitty. She was standing at the top of the stairs and crying because she missed us. So mm-hmm. I brought her down to the basement with us to record.
So now if you hear her begging to leave the room here in a second, you'll know what's going
on. She won't. She'll climb up. Sometimes she sits on my shoulder like a parrot.
She's precious. Okay, so none of this has anything to do with medicine, Sydney.
No, Justin, we've gotten I was going to thank the listeners. So many of you sent it in. There's too many to thank now. Who sent in this topic suggestion. Justin, there's a show on called Sandman.
Yes, I know. It's based on the Neil Gaiman graphic novel series.
Yes.
I haven't gotten around to watching it yet. I've read the first volume of The Omnibus. You know it's a good graphic novel if there's an omnibus. If you see omnibus, that's good stuff right there, or good stuffies.
Does yours have an omnibus?
Of graphic. We have a recently discontinued box set of the first three books. So no omnibus yet. But boy, when we get that omnibus, that money's going to come rolling in. That'll be the real heyday in my mid-50s when all the Taz graphic novels are out.
A lot of our listeners are watching this show because there was a medical condition referenced on the show. And so this is where this episode comes from. I got many suggestions that we should look into a sleeping sickness that is mentioned on Sandman. And when I say that, I know immediately you're going to think, like, sleeping sickness as in African sleeping sickness is sometimes how it's referred because of the fact that it is endemic to parts of the continent Africa. Specifically, it is called Trypanosoma brucei, and it is transmitted by the tsetse fly. And I think, and I didn't mean for that to rhyme, I think that have we talked about that before? I don't remember. Maybe?
I don't know.
I'll have to double check. This is not what we're talking about. That is probably the sleeping sickness you're most familiar with if you hear that like colloquial term. That's something else. This is a sleeping sickness, not the sleeping sickness. It is a sickness that makes people sleep. And the one that they are referencing in Sandman is something called encephalitis lethargica.
Okay.
Which is different.
And what is it?
It's one of the biggest mysteries in medical history.
Ooh, how did it just take us this long to get here?
I don't know. It's a good question. I have like encountered little bits and pieces about encephalitis lethargica many times in my various researches, and I don't know why I never like like skip to that one next, you know, like sometimes jump skip
it's just
to
like
that
something
one.
Something seems hard, so you don't deal with it. You just don't. You just decide not to engage with it. I do that sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's true. Sometimes if I know it's going to take more time and I don't have that much time. Encephalitis lethargica, as you may imagine, the lethargica part of it is referencing the severe lethargy or sleepiness that it causes.
Correct.
Encephalitis is inflammation of the brain.
Okay.
Okay. Itises or inflammation is, this okay. is.
What? Say again?
Sorry. Itis is inflammation okay. is the sentence that I was attempting.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I am on hospital services. My brain is lethargic, not medically. When you say lethargic to a doctor, that means something very scary.
Okay.
I just mean that I'm tired.
Got it. Okay.
Not medically lethargic. Not clinically
you're
lethargic.
You're regular. You're
colloquially. Keep,
yeah.
Lethargic.
Yeah. You're still at the top of your game. Semi exhausted is still better than 90% of the doctors out there. So.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I'm not at work right now. I'm at home in case anyone's worried about how tired I am.
Were you under the assumption that?
Well, I'm talking about how I'm on hospital service and I'm really tired.
You're like, oh man,
that sounds dangerous.
It sounds like
but
your
I'm
bones
home.
Are in really bad shape. I need like 35 minutes and then I'll be right back with you. I got a cast, baby.
Just keep breathing. Keep breathing.
Those mattresses ain't going to sell themselves.
So it's 1916. You are Dr. Constantine von Economo.
Okay.
Economo.
I have in my possession
von
Economo. One rapier, five rations. And a mysterious scrap of paper that says, follow the chimneys.
Follow the chimneys.
I know. It's evocative, right? Yeah. You want to know more. You're hooked.
I thought it had maybe a Mary Poppins tie.
I've been working on the new Tazark, so now I'm like a master world builder. So I've just constructed this fiction.
You're working at the Psychiatric Neurological Clinic of the University of Vienna.
Okay.
So this is where you are. And by the way, because you're Dr. Economo, you come from a very wealthy Romanian family, so you also get to be a baron in this story. Baron von Economo.
Oh, my.
Yes. But he prefers doctor. Please.
Of course.
Doctor.
Please.
Now, Dr. von Economo, Dr. Economo, Dr. von Economo.
Dr. von Economo.
Dr. von Economo. He starts noticing patients coming in with a strange new constellation of symptoms.
Okay.
These patients have all been admitted under other diagnoses, right? Because people probably said, well, this looks most like this.
Right.
Even though it didn't look exactly like meningitis. It looks kind of like meningitis, so we'll call it that. Or it looks kind of like MS, or it's kind of like delirium. So they were calling it, all these different patients had been diagnosed with something different, even though maybe their symptoms weren't perfect for whatever that diagnosis was.
Okay.
But they all have some things in common, he starts to notice. They have some strange neurological symptoms, like irregular eye movements. Their eyes will sometimes get locked in positions and unable to move.
Okay.
Like in an upward gaze.
Weird.
And they can't move them. Or they have weird twitches suddenly, or what are called choreiform movements, which are like sort of uncontrolled dance-like movements.
Choreo.
Yeah.
Form.
Mm-hmm.
The form
like
of dance-like
dance. Movements. Those are most usually associated with Huntington's disease is where you see this sort of neurological symptom. So they have a variety of these sort of neurological symptoms. Sometimes they seem to just sit in almost like a catatonic state. They just sit and they stare and they don't speak. They tend to be very sleepy. All of them seem to be completely exhausted, spend lots of time sleeping, except the few who seem kind of the opposite, like hyperkinetic and almost manic and can't stop moving and not themselves. They have psychiatric manifestations. As he starts talking to these patients, all of them had symptoms that sound a little like the flu at first.
Hmm.
They had fevers, they had sore throats, some of them had headaches or nausea. So like something that they may have just written off as, you know, We were beginning to understand infections at this point in history. So, like, I caught something, I got sick.
What can you do?
You would assume you'd get better.
Yeah.
But then it shifted into something very different. So, von Economo began talking to other doctors at other hospitals in the area and discovering that they were also seeing cases like this.
Hmm.
And nobody quite knew what to make of it
at first.
Stuff
they hadn't seen before.
Stuff that, yes, that did not fit any other diagnoses. It had aspects of different diagnoses, but as you were like, you didn't want to label it one of those things because you couldn't feel certain. And then as they started looking back, they noticed, Von Economo started noticing that there have been cases at these random hospitals since like 1915. Mm. So for a little while now, this had been reported.
Not a new thing then.
But it seemed to be more prominent now.
Okay.
Like there were lots more of them. So something had caused these case numbers to erupt of whatever this thing is that is still unnamed. So after he kind of collects all this information from all these other doctors and all these cases and all of these sort of reports on these patients, in 1917, he publishes an account of the cases and a definition of the condition, and he calls it encephalitis lethargica, its sequelae and treatment. So
what's sequelae mean?
All of the stuff that can happen because of it.
Okay.
Like all of the clinical manifestations and complications and long-term effects and everything that happens to a human when they have it. Anyway, he would call it encephalitis lethargica because it seemed to be some sort of inflammatory process of the brain. And then also people were very tired. And even though he called it that, a lot of people started referring to it as Von Economo's disease. Which is...
Don't love that one.
Well, what's weird is I think it's catchier, Von Economo's disease.
Von Economo.
But it didn't catch on because most people, if they talk... You know how everybody's talking about encephalitis lethargica all the time? Mm-hmm. And they call it that?
Yeah.
All the time?
Yeah, everybody's talking about it all
the time. Like, everybody's always talking about it.
They don't shut up about
it. Like, every party I go to, that's all that anyone is talking about. And by anyone, I mean I'm telling people about it.
They're like, dude, why haven't you done an episode on this? And you're like, I'm scared. I was scared to do it. It seemed hard, so I didn't do it.
So again, as he writes down sort of this account of it, you kind of get like a definition, right? So if you're going to find a new condition, if you're going to declare that you have discovered a new medical condition, you have to create a definition of it.
Okay.
Like, what is it then? What sort of things have to be present to say this is what it is? Yeah. We had to do this with COVID, right?
Right.
Like, people got the coronavirus. How did we know they had COVID-19? What were the constellation of symptoms? How did we test for it? How do we define it? How do we say, like, you have COVID?
Isn't it weird? Remember when there was a lot of symptoms popping up early on? It's like, here's one thing we know about it for sure. And it's like, no. 2 weeks later, it's like, we were wrong about that. There was the gas leak, and we were so very sorry. We messed up.
Yeah. And can I tell you, by the way, how many patients now I'm caring for that have gastrointestinal symptoms that, like, that's the prominent feature. It's really? Very strange. It also is evolving. Yeah, multiple. COVID's still out there, folks.
Hey, this is not a joke. Reminder. Not a joke.
Take it from a doctor working in a hospital.
Just be smart.
So please get vaccinated. Encephalitis lethargica, he lays it down as characterized by first this sort of prodrome of fever and headache and sometimes double vision and you feel tired, but like it seems more like a viral kind of illness, like the flu or whatever, something like that. And then it progresses to a couple different sort of, there's a couple different ways it can progress, but you get a variety of symptoms like we talked about. Either you're sleepy all the time, you can have that sort of comatose state that we talked about, or catatonic state. You can have an oculogyric crisis, which is when your eyes move in positions and you can't move them back, like you can't control your eyes, and even can progress to this like Parkinsonism kind of picture eventually. One particular interesting thing is clazomania is a symptom that was associated with it, which is compulsive shouting.
Oh. Interesting.
That was something that people could have.
Huh.
Yeah, it can be sort of like tics you can see in different tic disorders, like
tic, T-I-C?
T-I-C.
Okay.
Like people yelling like coprolalia, referring to yelling like bad things.
Oh.
Inappropriate things.
Swears.
Using, not yelling necessarily, but saying inappropriate things.
Curses.
Uncontrollable. Or like, yeah.
Gotcha.
Sexual, whatever, those kinds of things. Things that you don't mean to say, but you can't stop it, and then you say it. Clazomania is like, you can't modulate the volume of your voice. Like that character,
like that
great Will Ferrell
character. The guy who can't modulate the volume of his voice.
So it's like compulsive yelling.
Okay.
So he writes about this. It's in Vienna. He's seen it around this area, but it's about to go global. You just like, we know illnesses do. now.
They love it.
They like to engulf the whole planet. And just like another illness in 1917 that we have talked about on the show many times recently, the influenza pandemic, the misnamed Spanish flu, but that is how you may have heard it. It was not, let's not blame Spain.
Not Spain's fault.
Nope. But just like it would do soon, encephalitis lethargica was about to be carried, whatever it was, by the presence of World War I. So as soldiers crisscrossed the globe and people were displaced and moved.
Much like the Band-Aid or the Hershey bar before it, its prevalence throughout the World War made it a household item that everybody had to have. Well, I mean, in this case, an illness that some people got. But, you know, the metaphor still stands.
Yes, exactly. And again, with World War I, we saw the exact same thing happen with influenza.
I'm not sure about the Hershey bar thing. It sounded true when I said it. Go on.
You've said that before, chocolate bars.
I feel like I saw it on an episode of Foods That Built America, but I don't remember if that was the exact bar.
This is not a food podcast.
I can lie about food all day, folks. Listen, Doughboys, I can't be held accountable for my food takes.
So anyway, because of World War I, you started to see, just like the flu pandemic would spread, you started to see cases of encephalitis lethargica popping up all over the globe. So it started maybe in these parts of Europe, but it soon spread to all parts of Asia and Africa and North America and Central America and South America. It was everywhere. Everywhere they were seeing cases. And I will say that it's hard to say an exact number because, I mean, one, you have to imagine it wasn't as easy to aggregate all this information.
Sure.
We're talking about—
By the time you got it over, it's outdated.
Yes. And we're talking about a time period where not only would it have been difficult to aggregate it, we're also in the middle of a war.
Right.
So people weren't necessarily interested in collaborating with their information. So it's hard to know how many cases there were. And it's also hard because, as you can tell from these symptoms I'm telling you, it can be kind of vague and the presentations were varying. Mm-hmm. And so who actually had it and who was just diagnosed with it incorrectly, it's really difficult to say. But it is estimated that between the years 1915 and 1926, 1 million or so people got it.
Wow.
Maybe more, maybe less. It's hard to say. There was one study that sort of estimated at 500,000, but it was a study just done in like North America to just estimate certain. Anyway, so, and we missed a ton of it. There was probably a ton that was never diagnosed.
So it's probably more than 1 million. Or maybe
unless
less.
We were misdiagnosing people, and then it would be less.
Less. So just to recap, it was either very, very many, a normal amount, or much less than that, and we don't know.
So with that great display of mathematic prowess, let's go to the billing department.
As we say every time at this segment, I'm going to run upstairs and flip the spaghetti squash.
The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth.
This week, the greatest discovery becomes Greatest Trek.
That's because Greatest Trek is for way more than just discovery.
We're the hit show on Maximum Fun that covers all the new Star Trek shows. Lower Decks, Strange New Worlds, Picard, Prodigy, Discovery, and any other Star Trek show Paramount throws at us.
Come check it out for our funny and formative recaps of all the new stuff the Star Trek Industrial Complex churns out. It's in your podcatcher every Tuesday.
Subscribe to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation.
Hey there, it's Annabelle Gurwitch.
And I'm Laura House. We host Tiny Victories, the 15-minute podcast that's about the little things.
Getting into the tiny victory frame of mind is about recognizing minor accomplishments and fleeting joys.
Isn't it a wonderful day when the first password you try actually works?
When it's freezing cold outside and toasty as all get out in my shower, my tiny victory is that I turn off the water and get on with my day.
We can't change this big dumb world, but we can celebrate the tiny wins.
So join us on Maximum Fun or wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's get tiny!
Okay, the spaghetti squash has been flipped. I'm safely back. It's looking great.
Okay. So as I said, somewhere around a million people worldwide got it. It was diagnosed more in some countries than others. Probably just awareness was a big part of it. And then there was also, like, they made a lot more diagnoses in urban areas than rural areas. But, like, it's hard to say why. You know, was that being missed or whatever? It tended to affect people between the ages of 10 and 30, although there were people slightly younger, slightly older than that. Mm-hmm. That seemed to be the brunt of who it affected. Initially, they didn't think it was a contagious disease.
Why?
Well, because they would have a presentation of just a single member of a household.
Mm.
Like, just one member of a family would come in with it.
Why
and the
that?
Rest of the family was well.
Why?
Well, I don't know.
What the heck?
I'm telling you, it's still one of history's greatest mysteries.
Oh, this is going to be unsatisfying. Okay, go ahead. Did you, like, is this like Jack the Ripper finally solved, case closed, where you're like finally going to tell me everybody what happened?
I mean, I have theories.
Okay, go on. You got a theory.
So at times, just, you know, they'd bring in one kid who had it or just one parent or whatever, like one person family. But then there was this one outbreak in Derby where there was this home for girls where out of 21 people, 12 of them got sick.
Oh my gosh.
Within this one girl's home, and 6 of them actually died from it. So then it really seemed like, well, I mean, this has got to be transmitted person to person. Like, how would you have a density of illness like this if it wasn't? And so it was really unclear, like, is this something people are catching, or is it something that everybody's catching, but only some people are reacting to?
Maybe it's environmental in some way because you have all these people.
So it was very difficult. The forms that people could have, because there were slightly different sort of like classifications, what kind of form you have, and you could progress from one to the other. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, some had what was called the somnolent ophthalmoplegic form, which was the most deadly by like half of people who got this form probably passed away. Others had more of, and that, you know, somnolent, obviously you're sleeping all the time and your eyes are uncontrolled. You can't control your eyes. Others had more of like a hyperkinetic form where they had all of these strange uncontrollable movements and this manic behavior, and they would have like all these psychiatric manifestations. Psychosis was common, hallucinations and that kind of thing. And then some had this amyostatic akinetic form, which basically means they were kind of rigid, had what we call like a waxy flexibility, meaning you could move their arm into a position. It was movable like wax. But then they would hold it there.
That's weird.
So you could raise their arm up and it would
stay.
Well,
that would be so disconcerting, I bet.
And they had like a masked face kind of appearance. The third form is somewhat similar to Parkinson's. Not identical, but somewhat similar to Parkinson's. And many of them did progress to what looked like Parkinson's disease.
But it wasn't.
No, it's different than Parkinson's. It was it is a clinical syndrome that you could call Parkinson's-like. But it is a post-encephalitic Parkinson's, right? Like it is as opposed to primary Parkinson's disease that people have genetically. This was as a result of this encephalitis that you got. You appear to have a Parkinson's-like condition. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I guess it's semantics, but
still.
But it is not, I don't want to give the impression that encephalitis lethargica is linked to every person who has Parkinson's disease.
Hmm. Just some similarities.
Yes.
Okay.
So on top of that, some progress
and it's
to
the
that.
Same, it's the same germ.
No. Parkinson's disease is not a germ.
Sorry.
Don't do that to me.
Okay.
So there was this Parkinson's-like phase that some would progress to that would happen like months or even years later sometimes.
Wow.
Like past you recovering from all your symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of like at the end of the day, if you take all the cases together, it was like a third
of the
third.
At the end of the day, take all the cases together. Da-dun, da-dun, da-dun. So you could save for the life of the poor. Da-dun, da-dun, da-dun. Sorry.
I wasn't ready for that.
I know. Sorry.
No, that was great.
You can't say at the end of the day and not expect me to leap into Les Mis. Come on.
When they looked at everything, it
was
like,
one for that.
It was like a third, a third, a third.
Okay.
A third of patients actually succumb to encephalitis lethargica. A third of them seem to get better and be fine. And a third of them progress to this chronic sort of form and had long-term sequela, manifestations, side effects, complications.
Hey, weird side note. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with anything. Do you know why they call weed chronic?
No.
Me neither. Wouldn't that have been interesting if I'd known? I just feel I was
that was just a wild thing to throw out
there. I
was
sitting here wondering. You said the word chronic. I was wondering, like, why do they call weed chronic? And I was like, I should ask Sydney. I bet she knows. She's a doctor. But you're not a weedologist, so not you wouldn't necessarily know.
I don't even have a prescribing card. So the people who did progress these symptoms would have some of the eye symptoms chronically. Some of the other neurological symptoms would stay chronically. There's also, again, a lot of psychiatric manifestations associated with the chronic encephalitis lethargica, changes in mood. Some people would have like feelings of euphoria with like increased sex drive. And I liked this symptom, excessive puns.
Oh, yeah.
And silliness. But because of all of these neurologic and psychiatric, and considering the time period we were in, a lot of people with the chronic form ended up institutionalized for many years as a result, because they were not necessarily able to care for themselves, or because at the time, having those sort of conditions, that's what a lot of people did, is institutionalized family members who had psychiatric conditions, or just neurological conditions like epilepsy you could have been institutionalized for. So a lot of people ended up institutionalized, unfortunately. And there's a book by Dr. Oliver Sacks called Awakenings that was written in 1973. That's the account of some of these people who were still living in these institutions with this chronic encephalitis lethargica.
Is there a movie?
This is also a movie in 1990 with De Niro and Robin Williams.
Wow, yeah.
So,
Was he Sacks?
Huh?
Was it based on that? Was he Sacks? Was it based on...
them? Yes. Yeah. It was Dr. Oliver Sacks who wrote the book Awakenings, and the movie was based on that book about like these people who had been living there for years with this condition that nobody ever figured out what it was. The people who succumbed to encephalitis lethargica, by the way, in case you're curious, how do you pass away from it? It was usually because of the neurological symptoms. Your respiratory drive would fail, respiratory failure. Which again, like some people immediately saw a lot of similarities as the years went on. I shouldn't say immediately, as the years went on, saw a lot of similarities to polio with some of this. You know, people going into respiratory failure, iron lung, all of that stuff. That was a question that would come up later. Now,
what a weird constellation of different effects. That's so wild.
And it was a really like. And I will say, because of this, to sort of finish the story about Dr. Sacks, that piece of it, because of the similarity to Parkinson's, and Dr. Sacks was treating these patients many years later, in the 60s, a drug came out called L-DOPA, which we used to treat Parkinson's disease. We have many other drugs now, but that was the first one. He sort of experimentally gave this to some of these patients because since the symptoms were so similar, maybe this would help. And it did seem to help. I think accounts of how much it helped were a little more optimistic than maybe the reality. I don't think everyone was I don't think anybody was necessarily cured by it. I do think it seemed to improve some patients. I don't know how much, and I don't know for how long. But it did give this sort of impression, like, is there a link here? And I should say, a lot of what they know about how it affected the brain and why we know it was an encephalitis, if you look at the time period when this pandemic happened, we were able to do like autopsies and look at the brain tissue and that kind of thing as these patients later on passed away. And so they were able to look at the tissue and see like what areas were inflamed and know sort of what was going on.
Okay.
Right. I mean, they actually did that to look at the brain, but they weren't able to isolate a cause. Just because you see a pattern of inflammation in the brain doesn't necessarily, it can give you clues as to what caused it. But it doesn't necessarily tell you definitively unless you find it there, like if you find the virus. So this pandemic was relatively short-lived, right, in the big picture. And it was largely restricted to just this one period in history. There have been outbreaks of things and case reports of things other times that we've retroactively gone back and tried to say, like, well, like, for instance, in 1580, there was this fever and sleepy kind of illness that hit a lot of Europe. Was that it? There was another one in London in 1673 to 1675. There were like these isolated accounts that occurred here and there. There was a sleep sickness in Germany from 1712 to 1713. There was something in Italy between 1889 and 1890 that they called Nona, which again was this somnolent kind of illness with Parkinson's like symptoms later on. So there are all these sort of like things, but it's so hard to go back. And what you're really just reading are accounts, right? Like you're not looking at patients, you're not taking histories, you're not doing exams, you're not even looking at bodies. You're just going back and reading historical accounts of an illness and trying to see if it fits this modern account. And there's lots of flaws in that.
But it's been 100 years since this happened. Have we been seeing more cases since?
So there have been a couple isolated, like maybe similar incidents since then, but no outbreaks certainly. And even the cases by modern standards that we thought maybe are encephalitis lethargica don't exactly fit these older case definitions.
Is it
so it's hard to say that we've seen it again?
We know the tools of the time were crude compared to what we have today. Is there a possibility that they're just like misdiagnosing two different things or misdiagnosing something that we are familiar with today?
Absolutely. Or? Well, I think that it is 100% certain that some of the patients that were diagnosed with this had something that we would have been able to recognize today. Mm-hmm. I think that's 100% certain. Our diagnostic techniques are so much more advanced. And I mean, we discover new illnesses all the time. We're able to catalog things better.
But they're curing lots of people every day.
That's a reference to The Room for all of you Room fans out there. Thank you, Tommy Wiseau. I know you're a listener.
Yeah, he's always a fan.
So definitely there were people tossed into this basket who did not have it. I think that is beyond a doubt true. But I think there was enough of something going on that there is also something that was missed, right?
Weird.
Like there definitely was something that happened to some of these people that caused some of these symptoms. And maybe if it happened again, we would be able to isolate it. The theories.
Well, here's hoping it happens again. I mean, that would be.
Well, I hope not. But the theories, by the way, because of its temporal relationship to the influenza pandemic, and because a lot of people who had encephalitis lethargica were like tested later to see if they had had the flu, and they did. There was this thought, like, is it a post-influenza thing? You know. We've seen that COVID can do many things. Could that strain of influenza that year have caused these sort of long-term neurological or like some sort of autoimmune reaction mm-hmm. after you got over the flu? Could that have happened? But the problem with that is that, one, not everybody who had it ever had the flu. And two, so many people had the flu that statistically it's hard to say, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like finding that relationship. It's like, well, I mean, it's like right now, frankly, everybody's getting COVID. I mean, unfortunately. And so it would be hard to connect it to anything right now because it's so prominent.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
So it's hard to say that it had anything to do with the flu. There have been studies done in the 2000s, actually. A lot of people looking back to try to isolate from like tissue and things like that to try to mm-hmm. find something, to try to link it with different etiologies. There was some recent research that suggested maybe a polio-like virus, like an mm-hmm. enterovirus in that family, that was found in many of the cases.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still not certain. We think it's something contagious, something infectious, that seems most likely. Something viral seems most likely. Some sort of post-viral reaction, autoimmune thing seems very likely.
But you,
what it was for sure, and will it happen again? We don't know.
Well, I think we can be certain of one thing after hearing all this, that Snoop misheard the term hydroponic and just shortened, he thought it was hydrochronic and then just shortened it to chronic.
Well, that's going to do it for us here at Sawbones.
Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to the taxpayers for use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Thanks to the Max Fun Network, and thanks to you for listening. That's going to do it for us for this week. Till next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.